And we're holding on Nun Vav Amud Bey's fifth line from the bottom. We learned yesterday about how Titus was punished by having a mosquito or gnat or whatever fly into his nose and start pecking at his brain, and what he went through, and what he went through with that, and the size of that that creature when he finally died. So now the Gemara continues. Ki hav kamayis, when Titus was about to die. Omalahu, he says to his people, Likliyulahu Gavla, burn that person, meaning himself, so burn his body. The Levadri Likitme Ashev Yami, and scatter the ashes all over the seven seas, Dolelishkache, Alakodi Odoi, Velikme Medina, so that the Jewish God won't be able to find him. At least this is how he thought, that that Hashem won't be able to find him and put him up for judgment. So he figured if he scattered like that. Now, yesterday, actually, we said that he thought that Hashem's power was only over the water. But that's why he said when the storm blew up against him that he claimed that. But now he's saying that. But now he's saying even within the water itself, he's figuring that Hashem wouldn't be able to find all the ashes everywhere and judge. So the Gemara continues. Unkelus bar Kloinikus bar Achse de Titus Hava. Now, later on, Unkelus bar Kloinikus was the nephew of Titus, or Agoris Agra changes the Girsa and calls him Unkelus bar Unkelus, and the nephew of Adrianus, who was a later Roman emperor. He was the one at the time of Beta, at the time of the massacre in Beta. And there are different Midrashim that identify Unkelus. Some identify him as the nephew of Titus and others as the nephew of Adrianus. Anyway, whatever the case, Boy Ligiuri, he was planning to become a ger, which of course we know eventually he did, and he wrote Targum Onkelos. But while he was still a goy, Ozel Askel Titus Benegida, he went and used black magic to raise up Titus's spirit from the grave, from Gehenim, and talk to him. Omalei, so he asked him, Man Choshevau Hu Alma, who is important in that world, and in the next world, Omalei Yisrael. So Titus tells him the Jews. Unkelus asked, Maula I Debuki Bahu, is it a good idea to join them? Omalei, Titus says, no. Milaihu Nefishin, there's a lot of details to their laws, there's a lot of mitzvahs. Volein Motzis the Kiyuminhu, you won't be able to fulfill all of them, so you may as well not bother. On the contrary, Titus tells him, Zil Igri Bahu Bahu Alma, go fight against them in this world, Bahabis Resha, and by doing that, you will become a leader. As you have the Pasuk in Eicha, her enemies have become the head, and that means whoever troubles and harasses the Jewish people becomes a leader. So therefore, Titus is telling him, if you remain a goy and instead you do like I do and harass and cause trouble to the Jews, then you'll become a leader as a result of that. Now, why is that? Why should it be called a Meitzel Yisrael Nasarosh? So there's a Tosfos in Chagiga that gives a reason, because that way people shouldn't think that Hashem gave over his people, the Jewish people, into the hands of somebody lowly. So Hashem raises that person up to great heights, and that way it's like, so to speak, more dignified for the Jewish people to be ruled over and harassed and then persecuted by such a person. There's a number of other reasons that are brought. Another point is because through such a person, the Jews do tshuva, so therefore that goy gets a certain schar for it in this world by becoming a leader. And then there's an interesting explanation that the vert is, we know the pasuk says, Lev Melochim B'sarim B'yad Hashem, that the hearts of kings and princes are in Hashem's hands, and he determines what they're going to do. So therefore, the person has to become a roish. Otherwise, if not, then he has more b'chir chofshis, and he might, chas v'shalom, try to wipe out the Jewish people. Once he becomes a melech, then that means, in effect, that Hashem is more is controlling what he's doing more than for a regular person, and therefore he doesn't have the ability to do that. Anyway, so this is what Titus is telling Onkelos, is don't bother becoming a Jew. On the contrary, remain a goy and persecute the Jews, and you'll gain. Omalei, so Onkelos asks Titus, Dinedahu gavra b'mai, that person, meaning you, what's your judgment? How are you being punished in the next world? Omalei, so Titus answers, b'mai deposik anafshe, the exact same thing that I established for myself, the exact same instruction that he gave before he died is now being done to him every day. Kol yom machnish lekitmei, every day all of his ashes are being gathered, because unlike his Goyish a cup that Hashem wouldn't be able to find and gather together all of the ashes. Hashem is very much able to do that. So every day they gather it together and remake his body, the Dainule, and then they judge and punish him, the Kolule, and then they burn him, or Mivadra, Shev Yami, and they scatter the ashes over the seven seas. So every day he's going through that punishment in Gehenna. Okay, so Unkelos now has one person telling him not to become a Yid. Well, also Askula Bilam bin Agida, now he went and took and brought up Bilam with the same magic to talk to him and ask him what to do. Omale man choshabahu alma. First he asks again, who's most important in that world? Omale Yisrael, and again Bilam tells him the Jewish people. Unkelos asked, Maula idibuki bahu, is it a good idea to join them? Omale, Bilam says no. Quoting or paraphrasing a pasuk, Loi sidra shlema v'tevasim kol hayamim. Don't look for their peace or for their good anytime during the at any time. Kol yamechol olam is how it actually says in the pasuk. Whatever the point is, in other words, he's telling you that in context, the pasuk is saying about Amun and Moav, never try to do good for them because of the way they treated the Jewish people. So now Bilam is turning that pasuk around and saying, don't ever try to look out for the good of the Jewish people. So Unkelos asks him, tell me, what kind of punishment are you going through in Olam Haba? So Bilam says, with boiling shichvas zera. So on the side, the Gilyon HaShas brings that maybe it doesn't mean literally, it just means, in other words, he was so into love of women and into znus, so therefore, like, that's what accompanies him into the next world. But basically, we're talking about, in other words, that... So Ben Yehoyada explains, it means, in other words, that normally normally Gehenna has fire. In this case, instead of fire, it turns into shichvas zera reisachas, and that way even the other inhabitants of Gehenna stay away from such a person, because as bad as the fire of Gehenna is, this is worse, this is even smelly and disgusting. The idea behind it is, first of all, it's midah keneged midah, because he got the Jewish people to be mezana with Benois Moav, which involves shichvas zera. And Marsha points out also, we find, of course, we know that Bilam was also was mezana with his donkey, so therefore that factors into it too. Well, Unkelos wants a third opinion. Ozel Askib in the Gidil of Poshe Yisrael. He went and brought up Poshe Yisrael with the same black magic. Now here the Gemara just says, Poshe Yisrael, in uncensored Gemaras, it says that the one he brought up was Yeshu HaNoitzri. Whether that Yeshu HaNoitzri is the same one that the Christians believe in is a whole question in itself. A number of Rishonim deal with that question and on both sides of the issue. Some say, for example, that Amban and others that it is the same one. Others say, I think the Meiri says, for example, that it is not. Anyway, so he brought him up to also ask him what to do. Omalei, again, he asks him, man choshebau hu alma, who is important in the next world? Omalei Yisrael, and this person, this Yeshu, answers him, the Jewish people. Unkelos asks him, maulei debuki bahu, what do you think of joining them? Omalei, so now this Pesheya, this Yeshu, tells him differently than the other two. Tovosim drosh ro'osim lo sidrosh. Always look out for the good of the Jewish people. Don't ever look to try to do them bad. Exactly the opposite of the way Titus and Bilam were telling him. And he continues, Kol ha-negeya behen, anybody who touches and tries to harm the Jewish people, ki'ilu negeya b'vavas enoy, is as if he's touching his own eyeball. In other words, what happens if a person touches his eyeball? He can make himself blind. The same way, the Jewish people are the light of the world, and if you harm them, then you're going to be in trouble yourself. The actual Loshan Apostik Negev Bavavas Enoi actually comes from a Apostik in Zechariah where it says exactly that. But Hashem says anybody who harms the Jewish people can Negev Bavavas Enoi. There's an interesting point over there that Rashi mentions. This is one of those places where you have what's called Tikkun Sofrim. On the face of it, the Pasuk should say, Negev b'vavas eini, that Hashem is saying the Jewish people are so precious to me that to harm the Jewish people would be as if like somebody touched my eyeball and tried to blind me. But because it's not respectful to talk about Hashem like that, therefore in the Pasuk instead it says, Einoi, that it's as if the person is touching his own eyeball, his own pupil of his eye, and making himself blind. But anyway, so here, apostasy means the same kind of thing, that it's like you're harming Hashem, and it's like you're harming yourself. So Uncle asks him, Dinida hu gavra b'mai, that person, meaning you, what kind of punishment are you suffering in Gehenna? Omalei b'tsoya resacha. So he answers with boiling tsoya, with boiling excrement. The Omar is, in fact, we learn in a Gemara in Erevin, anybody who laughs, who mocks the words of the Chachamim, as this Yeshua Noitzri did in his time, Nidin b'tsoya resachas, is punished in Gehenna with boiling tsoya. Where again, the idea is, in other words, Ben Yehoyada says the point of that is that it means that even the other denizens of Gehenna will stay far away from him because it's disgusting and smelly. Mefoshim point out, by the way, Marsha and Maram Shif and so forth talk about that when the Gemara brings that Omer Mar, that Drosha, is in a Gemara in Erevin, the Gemara actually slugs up the Drosha over there. Nonetheless, even though the Gemara slugged it up and explained the Pasuk differently, nevertheless, still the Gemara is saying over here it's still considered it's still a valid Drosha. Anyway, what's the symbolism? So Marsha says he was mevaza divrei chachamim, therefore he gets punished in a way of great bizoyin by being punished with tsoya resachas. The Maharal adds another point as well. Tamid chachamim are separated from the general mass of humanity, from most people, by their greatness in Torah. Tsoya is on the opposite. It's separated from the body because of its lowliness, because it doesn't even belong. It's not even something that the body can use for its nourishment. Therefore, a person who's malagal divrei chachamim and thinks that they're no better than anybody else, that they're no different than the bodies of other people. So he gets punished with tsoya resachas, being shown that on the contrary, you're being punished with something which is completely separated from the body. So the Gemara points out, Tochazi, Mabin, Posh Yisrael, Lunavir, Omasa'olam, Ov David Azar. Come look and see the difference between a Jew and a Goy, even though this Posh Yisrael, or whether it was Yeshua Noitzvi, or whoever it was, anyway, even though he was such a Rosha and he's being punished with Tsoyar Nesachas, nevertheless, he still advises, he knows the truth in the Olam Emes, and he tells Onkelos not to even try to think of harming the Jewish people, whereas Bilam and Titus, and Bilam was even a Navi, so he actually got Nevuah from Hashem, and yet even in the next world, he and Titus can't hold themselves back from still saying bad about the Jewish people and saying you should try to persecute them whenever possible. So the Gemara finishes off. Tanya, Omer Rav Elazar, Boyer e kamak dola koicha shel busha. Come see how great is the power of embarrassment. From the story of Kamsa about Kamsa, where he was embarrassed and humiliated publicly, you see from that how powerful what a powerful effect such a thing has. Because as a result of Bar Kamsa being publicly humiliated, Hashem helped him out. Hashem didn't prevent him from carrying out his evil plot, and caused the Beis Hamikdash to be destroyed and the Heichal to be burnt. Meaning, had it not been for that, then when Bar Kamsa went with his Malshinus, first of all, the Romans might not have accepted it. Even if they did, for example, when we learned yesterday that they weren't sure, the Chachamim weren't sure whether to bring the Korban, and Rabbi Chaya ben Avkulas told them not to, and they were thinking to kill Bar Kamsa, and Rabbi Chaya ben Avkulas told them not to. That was all orchestrated by Hashem. Otherwise, B'derech HaTeva, they would have listened and they would have brought the animal as a Korban, or they would have listened and killed Bar Kamsa, and that would have been the end of the story. Why does Busha have such a great power? The Maharal explains that busha means you take away the tselem alekim of a person. So because of that, the tselem alekim on the cosmic level of which is the Beis Mikdash, where Hashem's Shechina is most present, is destroyed as a result of taking away the tselem alekim of a fellow yid. So even as much as by this Bar Kamsa was a rosha, as we learned yesterday, nevertheless they shouldn't have treated him that way in public. Okay, next. We said at the beginning of the sugya, we gave three examples where people didn't pay attention to the consequences of their actions. And the second one was Atarna Golta, Choriv Turmalka. Turmalka, which is a very thickly, as we're going to see now in the Gemara, a very thickly populated and fertile area in Eretz Yisrael. Nowadays, they're not The Gemara is going to say soon that Eretz Yisrael shrinks when the Jews are not in it. Nowadays, they're not even sure where the original Tur Malka was. Some say it was the area around Hebron. Some say it was an area in what's nowadays the Shomron. So nobody's really sure. Anyway, as a result of a rooster and a hen, Tur Malka was destroyed. Chorev Tur Malka. Davin Nehigi, they had a minig in this area of Tur Malka. Kiyavu Maki Chason of Akalsa, when a Chosin and Kala were going out to get married, Mapki Kamayo, town of girl of a town of Girlta. They would bring out in front of them a rooster and a hen, calling a prur vuka town of Golem, as a symbol that they should be fruitful and multiply like chickens. Chickens lay eggs every day, and the males are constantly interested in mating with the females. You even have in other places in the Gemara, it uses chickens as a symbol of somebody who's promiscuous like that. So they had that as a simon for the chosin kala. One day, a band of Roman soldiers, a troop of Roman soldiers, was passing by there. Shaklinu minayu, and they took away the chickens from them. Naflu alayhu, so the Jews fell on them and naflu alayhu machunhu. They fell on them and hit them and started beating them. Now, why do they react, or why did they overreact like that? So one point is that the Jews figured, why are the Romans taking away these chickens? They don't have anything better. They don't have anything better to get. So they figured that maybe the Romans are doing it deliberately. They want to interfere with the pruvu of the Jewish people. So therefore, that's a very serious thing. So they attacked them. Nevertheless, we're saying it was careless of them to do that because the Romans aren't going to take that lying down. They came and went. They went and told the Roman emperor, the Jews have rebelled against you. So the emperor sent, the emperor came with his army to fight against them. When exactly this happened, we don't really know either. Maybe it was part of the events during the war of the Churban, although since the Gemara puts it second, then maybe not. It puts it in between the story of the war of the that led to the Churban and the war of Bar Kokhba. So it may have happened in between them, or it may have been part of one or the other of those wars. We don't know. Anyway, the Gemara continues. Habibahu hahu bar daroima. Among the Jews in Tur Malka, there was a certain Bar Daroima, which means literally it means a person from the south. In general, the south is associated with the right hand. Directions in Tanakh are almost always given in terms of a person facing east, and therefore south is to his right, and the right hand is stronger, and therefore the symbolism that he was Bar Daroima. So literally, Rabbi Yaakov Emden says it means exactly that. That he came from the south of Yerushalayim, but also the idea is it represents how strong he was, that he had that quality, he had that extra quality of strength. Anyway, to have a kofetz mila, he was able to jump a mil at a time, which is about 3/5 of a mile, the kotel behu, and kill the Romans. So the Romans are up against somebody tremendously powerful. Shakla Keso the Tage, when the emperor found out about this, he took his crown and put it on the ground. So one idea could be, in other words, that he's doing this to show his submission before Hashem when he's about to, in his goyish way, he's going to dive into Hashem now. It could also be like he's doing it symbolically, like if I have to have my crown removed, let it be removed this way by me just putting it now on the ground rather than having it actually removed as in by force. We had earlier in the Masechta something similar. We had a story involving one of the Amiroyim who gave a psak din that a certain woman didn't like, and she said his chair deserves to be overturned, meaning he deserves to lose his position or become sick or something. Rav Huna it was, and the Chachamim actually turned over. And the Chachamim there turned over his chair like this way, symbolically let her curse be fulfilled that way. So here the emperor might have been doing the same thing. Anyway, so he put his crown on the ground. Omar, and he says, Rebbeinu da'alma kula, master of the world, Hashem, I nichaloch, if you would please, loy timser v'ahu gavra, l'didei l'malchose b'yidei d'chad gavra. Don't give over that person, meaning me and myself and my kingdom, into one man's hands. In other words, the emperor is saying, in effect, you know, if you have a superior force, an army or whatever, goes and attacks us and conquers us, so be it, and beats us, fine. But that you should have one person, this one Bar Daroima, that all by himself, he should be able to overcome the entire Roman Empire. It's not right. Well, Hashem listened to his tefillah. Actually, Pumi the Bar Deroima. Bar Deroima's mouth ended up tripping him up by saying something improper. Omar, the Omar, and he says, "Haloi ata lekim znachtonu, Hashem, haven't you abandoned us? V'loi seitzei lekim b'tzeveisenu, Hashem, do not go out with our forces." In other words, in effect, he's saying with those words, Hashem, we don't need your help. We can beat the goyim without your help. Mefoshim point out that it's not just how would it be fair for Hashem to cause him to say that to be defeated because of that, just because of the emperor's tefillah. So Mefoshim explained he was already thinking about this before. He just had never spoken it out openly. Now as a result of this, Hashem caused that now he speaks it out openly and says that this blatant kfirah that we don't need Hashem's help. So the Gemara asks, what's the problem with him saying that? David Nami Omahochi. What he's saying is a pasuk in Tehillim. So David said the exact same thing. The answer is David Atmui Kamatma. The answer is David is not saying it as a statement, Hashem, don't help us. He's wondering. He's saying it's like a rhetorical, he's asking Hashem almost as a rhetorical question, why have you abandoned us? Why are you not going out with our and helping our forces? And in fact, Marsha says, if you look at the psukim before and after it, you find that David is saying it as part of a tefillah of praise to Hashem, thanking Hashem for helping them until now, and he's saying, Hashem, why aren't you continuing to help us? He says also, you have a remez in the fact that the previous pasuk continues, the previous pasuk ends, Minochani ad Edom, who will lead us to Edom, meaning the Romans. So in other words, David was seeing Baruch HaKodesh that this is going to happen, that the Jewish people are going to be fighting against the Romans, and he's asking in advance, Hashem, why don't you help us against the Romans? But he's not Chas V'Shalom saying we don't need Hashem's help. Whereas Bar Deroima is saying it as a state. So the result is how he was punished. So how was Bar Deroima punished? Al Besakisi, he went in at one point to the bathroom. Osa Darkoina, a snake came, Shamte Lakaukashe, and pulled out his rectum, pulled out his lower part of his intestines, the Noch Nafshe, and Bar Deroima passed away. So the emperor's tefillah had actually been answered. Omar, so the emperor thinks to himself, over Nissa, since a nest happened to me, then this time I'll leave the Jews alone. As much as I usually the Romans punished any suspicion of rebellion very strongly, but here he's saying I was saved only by a nest, so fine, I'm willing to give them a break. Shavkinu va'ozel, sure enough, he left them and went away. He raised the siege and left. So the Jews there in Tur Malka were so happy, izdakur, they jumped up and started dancing. Va'ochlu v'shosu, they were eating and drinking, va'adliku shragi, and lighting lamps. And there were so many lamps, because as the Gemara is going to say soon, Tur Malka was very, very heavily populated. So there were so many, to the point where you could see a stamp from a signet ring, a stamp on clay or whatever, you could see it, you could see it by the light a mil away from the city. So they could see how much the Jews are celebrating. And they're celebrating. Where's the thanks to Hashem? Where's a little bit of achna that we were almost in such danger and Hashem saved us? Instead, they're eating and drinking and making it as though like we beat the emperor. So Omar, so the emperor thinks to himself, the Jews are laughing at me. They're thinking I withdrew because I can't beat them. Hodor Osalayu, so he brought back his army to start fighting against them as well. And the Gemara continues, Omar Abasi, Tlasmea Alfi Shlifi Saifa, Ailo the Turmalka, 300,000 soldiers with drawn, Roman soldiers with drawn swords, went into Turmalka, the Kotlaba Tlosa Yomer, Tlosa Lelavasa, and they're killing there throughout the next 3 days and nights. And yet, Vahach Gisa, he mulled the Vachinki, and yet on the other side, of Tur Malka, they were still having celebrations and dances. They were still continuing to celebrate, and they didn't know They didn't know what's going on the other side because Tur Malka was such a large area. that was such a large area that there was killing going on at one end, and at the other end they're still feasting and partying until eventually the Romans got them also. So now the Gemara continues. So let's give you an idea how heavily Tur Malka was populated. A pasuk says in Eicha, Bila Hashem v'lo chomal eis kol na'os Yaakov. Hashem swallowed up, and he had no rachmanos on all the na'os, where na'os means dwellings of Yaakov. So what does that so what does that mean? So he also Ravin, Amar Rav Yochanan, when Ravin came from Eretz Yisrael, he explained the name of Rav Yochanan. He was an example of what we mean. Elu shishim ribu yayoris. There were 600,000. There were 600,000 cities or towns. Shahul of Yanei HaMelech b'Har HaMelech. Yanei HaMelech owned 600,000 towns in this area of Har HaMelech. And Hashem ended up, and all of them ended up being destroyed. And that's what we mean. Bila Hashem. Hashem destroyed them. V'loy chomal, and he had no rachmanos on them. And you want to know not only how many towns there were, but how many people there were in each one of them. The Amar of Yehuda, Amar of Asi. Shishim ribu ayoris hole the Yanei HaMelech b'Har HaMelech. There were 600,000 cities that Yanei HaMelech owned on Har HaMelech. V'chol achas hoyu ba ki yotzi Mitzrayim. Each one of those towns, each one of those cities, had in it a number of people equal to the number of Jews who left Mitzrayim. Which means now you have the number of Jews who left Mitzrayim is in the millions, but we're talking about the census that counted each time 600,000 adult males. So the same way, each of these cities had a population of at least 600,000. Chutz Misholish, with the exception of three of the cities, Shohayu ben Kiflayim Yotzei Mitzrayim, where these three particular cities each had twice as many as Yotzei Mitzrayim. The Eluhain, the three cities are they're called Kfar Bish, Kfar Shechalayim, Kfar Dichrayim. So what's the symbolism of the names? Kfar Bish, the word Bish in Aramaic means bad. Means Deloyavi Basil Ushpiza, people would not give in this town, people did not give lodging for Orchim to stay overnight. So they were stingy, and they didn't want Orchim to stay by them. But with that sound, on the face of it, it sounds pretty bad. On the other hand, the Gemara soon calls the area of Har HaMelech, the people of Har HaMelech, or at least of that area, it calls them tzaddikim. So there are mefarshim who find ways to justify what they did. Maybe it means they didn't want, instead of the orchim being individually by people's houses, maybe they just set up a general achnasas orchim for them. But still, nevertheless, it wasn't the best thing for them to do. Anyway, the second one is called Kfar Shechalayim. The second one is called Kfar Shechalayim. Shahoisa Parnasasan min Shechalayim. They made a living by growing and selling Shechalayim, which is a type of vegetable. It's called quest in English. So here actually, Marsha says that here what we're saying is that even in these three cities, we're saying, in other words, that each of them weren't really so good. So in other words, maybe we could say the people in the rest of the cities were good, but not these three. You have in an entire city of 1.2 million, the first one, Kfar Bish, you don't have a single person who's willing to give a place for Orchim, for poor people to stay. It's almost like the people of Sdoim. The same way, the Kfar Shechalayim, the point is to highlight, well, here it's not so much how no good they were, but look at that. Hashem made it that over a million people are all able to make their living by growing and selling Shechalayim, showing that there was a certain bracha in that area. And the third one, Kfar Dichraya, or Dichraya is the Aramaic word for males. So Amar Rav Yochanan, Shahoyun Shesein Yodas Sporim Tchila, their wives would give birth first to a boy, the Yodas Nekeba Bachrona, and then to a girl, Upoiskus, and then they would stop giving birth, so like the population never grew. So you have the other way around, Bas Tchila Simen Yofel Abonim, so here it was the other way around, they had a boy first and then a girl, and they didn't have such a bracha. Even though, again, it was a city of over a million. There are mefarshim will point out there's a ruchniastic idea behind this also. When we say bas tchila simin yafel abanim, it means the idea that a person starts with yira, which is compared to the nekeva, and then from that he reaches avas Hashem, which is compared to a zachar. But here these people went about it the wrong way. They're thinking we can start with ava, and so they develop some degree of ava and maybe some degree of yira tatar or something, but they never progress any further in their relationship with Hashem. Anyway, the Gemara continues, Oma Ola, Lididi Chozi Liahu Asra, I personally saw that area of Haramelech, and Ola lived, 200 or so years after these events, after the Jews had been massacred in these places. And he says, Vafilu Shitin Rivosakani Lemasik, the place is not that big. You wouldn't even be able to fit 600,000 reeds in it, which take up a lot less space than people. So in effect, in other words, he's saying, how could there have been 600,000 towns in there, each one of the population of 600,000, they never would have fit. So when Ula says that, well, then a certain Tzeduki said to Rav Chanina, you must be lying. You're saying that there were so many towns and so many people over there, and Ula is telling us that the place is tiny. Omalei, Rav Chanina says, it's not a contradiction. Eretz Tzvi Ksivba. The Pasuk calls Eretz Yisrael Eretz Tzvi, which literally means the land of the deer. In context, Tzvi means like desire, so it means the land of Hashem's special desire. But anyway, here the Gemara is doubting Tzvi Meloshin a deer. Ma Tzvi ze en ore machsikas bizarre. Just like a deer's skin will not fit its flesh. In other words, the skin, when the animal is alive, is stretched very tightly over the flesh. And if you take off the skin, off the flesh, off the animal, then you won't be able to put it back on. You won't be able to stretch it to its original size again. Af Eretz Yisrael is the same way. Bizman sheyoshven aleha, when the Jewish people are living in Eretz Yisrael, ravva, then it's larger in size, it expands. Or bizman she'en Yisrael yoshven aleha, when the Jewish people are not living in Eretz Yisrael, gamda, then Eretz Yisrael shrinks. And now you have, like Ula is telling us, that the place is tiny and even 600,000 reeds wouldn't fit there. Okay. So the Gemara continues. Rav Manumi bar Chilkiah, Rav Chilkiah bar Tovia, Rav Huna bar Chia, Havu Yasvi Gabe Hadodi. These three Chachamim are one time sitting together. Amri, they said, I Ika de Shmile Milsa, Mikfar Schanya Shomitzrayim. Is there anybody who, if anybody among the three of us has heard anything, any stories about Kfar Schanya Shomitzrayim, lema than they should say. So Kfar Schanya Shomitzrayim, as the Gemara is going to go on to say, was also a city full of Jews, and it was also destroyed. So the Gemara may be bringing it in over here, because once we talked about Tur Malka, so now the Gemara, and all the villages are in it, so now the Gemara mentions the Pashtus Kfar Schanya Shomitzrayim, we would understand was in Mitzrayim, there were Jews living there, and it also was destroyed, and the Gemara wants, and the Amoroyim want to look for the reason behind it, what Aveira of theirs triggered it. It could also be that Kfar Schanya Shomitzrayim is actually one of the villages in Tur Malka, and Shomitzrayim would mean that the Jews who lived there came from Mitzrayim and settled in Eretz Yisrael. Anyway, whatever. So they're asking, were these people in that particular village Tzadikim or Rishoyim? And then based on that, let's see, let's figure out what happened to them. So one of them, where one of the three Amiroyim, started saying, it happened once with a man and a woman who were in Orus and Arusa. They had done Kiddushin, but they hadn't yet done Nisurian, who were from that city of Kfar Schanya, who were captured by Goyim. And the Goyim married them off to one another. The Goyim, of course, don't care about marriage, but they wanted, in other words, that these two should have relations, and they'll have children who the Goyim can keep as Avodim as well. However, Omraloi, however, the girl said, the Kala said to the Chosin, I'm begging you, don't touch me, because I don't have a ksuba from you, and Kala is also to her husband without a ksuba. And why couldn't a ksuba be written? Mephoshim talk about different possibilities. The chosin may not have had any assets. He's enslaved by the goyim. After all, he has no assets of his own to be able to pledge for the ksuba. There may not have been Jews there available to be aidim. So we don't know. Anyway, v'lenogaba ad yomoy, says sure enough, he didn't touch her until he died. Uchshemes, when he passed away, Omra lahen, the arusa said to them, you should mourn for this person. He belittled, and he didn't pay attention to his Yetzirah. He overcame his Yetzirah in a way even more than Yosef. Now, who is she talking to? Again, before she talked about different possibilities, there may have actually been Jews over there. We said there weren't Jews available to write a ksuba. There may have been, for example, only women over there, and she can be talking to them, but still, of course, they couldn't be writing, they couldn't be edim on a ksuba. It could be she's actually talking to the goyim themselves. It can also mean eventually Jews came to, eventually Jews found out, other Jews found out that there's pidyon shvuyim to be done, and we need to go ransom these Jews from the goyim. By the time they came, the oros had passed away, so now she's telling them, I want to tell you about my Oros and realize what a tremendous Nisoyan he went through. So he went in a way greater than Yosef. By Yosef, it was only a one-time thing. Now you find Ashes Petifra was trying to get him for a long time, for almost an entire year. But the point is, the thing where she actually grabbed a hold of him and told him Shich Ve'imi was a one-time thing. Here it was every single day they're living together, and he had to overcome his Yetzirah. Also, v'ilu Yosef lav b'chodamita v'hai b'chodamita. By Yosef, he and Potiphar's wife were not in one bed. Here, the chosin and kala are having to sleep together in one bed because that's all the goyim gave them. And yet he overcame his Yetzirah. And v'ilu Yosef lav ishtoi v'hai ishtoi. And the fact is, by Yosef, it wasn't his wife. It was Potiphar's wife, and he knew objectively it's wrong. So as opposed to over here, you could argue, after all, she was his wife. They were already chosin and kala. And then the goyim and married them off to one another. So he could have used as an excuse that that in that case it should be mutter. And nevertheless, he overcame his yetzirah and did not. So that's the great nesoyan that he went through. So you see from that story, in other words, that stam orus and arusa, a random couple from Kfar Sechanya, Shom Mitzrayim, were tzaddikim. Posach idach ba'omar, the second one of the Amoroyim started saying, Maise, here's another story from Kfar Sechanya, v'omdu arboim modius b'dinner. The price of wheat was 40 modius to one dinner. A modia is some kind of measure. So the nechser asham modia achas. And then nechser asham modia achas, then all of a sudden the price dropped by one modia, or we would say actually the price went up. But meaning, in other words, now you can only buy 39 modia for a dinner. So the price had gone up, and now it's going to be a little harder for poor people to be able to buy food. So they checked into why have they been punished from Hashemayim. Umotzu abu b'no shebor al nayir ha'maros b'yom kippurim. They found a father and son who had relation to the nayir ha'maros on Yom Kippur, which is, the Gemara sometimes uses that as an example of the ultimate degree of Avera. It's on Yom Kippur, and it's something which is chayiv skila, and so forth. They're viewed the Beis Din b'soklum, so they brought them to Beis Din and gave them skila. B'chozer ashar l'mekoymei, and the price went back to what it was before 40 modia for the dinner. So we see from that, among others, we see that was the only Aveda that was there, and therefore once that was taken care of, then things were back to normal. It shows that even when such a horrible Aveda was done, the punishment for the town was relatively light, that only prices went up slightly rather than much more severe consequences. So we see from that also that they were tzaddik. Posach idach ba'omar, the third one started saying, another story from Kfar Sechanya, Maisa ba'odim echad shenosin eina b'ishtri l'garsha. There was a man over there who wanted to divorce his wife. V'hoysa ksubos meruba, but her ksuba was very large and he couldn't afford to pay it. Ma'osa, so what did he do? He figured he wants to frame her in a way that he shouldn't have to pay the ksuba. Holach v'zimines shushvinav, he went and invited his close friends, and he gave them to eat and drink, shikron, and he got them drunk. He had them lie all together on one bed. So he has the men together with his wife all lie on one bed when they're drunk. Then he brought some egg white, and put it on and spilled it, some raw egg white, and spilled it on the bed between them. Then he has people come and say, Edus, we saw the substance on the sheets between them, and it looks like Sheikh Vazer. And he comes to Beis Din to claim that his wife was Mizana. And if it checks out, if the Beis Din interrogates the Edim and finds out that what they're saying is correct, then she'll forfeit her ksuba because of the znus. And then he'll have an excuse to divorce her without paying the ksuba. However, in that town, there was an old Tamil Chacham, one of the students of Shamei HaZaken, his name was Bavu Ben Buta. Omalahan, he tells him, Kach mekublani mishamei azokin. I have the Kabbalah from Shamei Azokin that we can tell whether this is Shichva Zera or not. Loiven beitz a solid mina ur. The white of an egg, if you expose it to heat, will dry up and solidify. As opposed to if you apply heat, then it'll be pushed away and it'll get absorbed further into the cloth rather than solidifying and hardening. But so they checked it, they did the test and found, like he said, sure enough, it's solidified. And so now they realized the guy was trying to play a trick and it was just egg white. They brought him to Basin and gave him Malkus, the Bruch Sebastian Menu, and they forced him to pay Huxuba and divorce her. Because if he's going to flame her like that, then she doesn't need to be married to such a person anymore. So we see from this story, there's various ways that we see from this story that the people in general there were tzaddikim. Among others, we see that just for a suspicion of znus without even solid eders, they were ready to say that the people were ready to say that he should have a valid reason to divorce her. There can be that the people themselves, they wouldn't even think of lying on the same bed with her even without znus unless they were drunk, unless they had been gotten drunk. And then there's a number of different explanations how exactly we see from this story. But in any case, the point is, we see from this and from the previous two stories that, yes, basically the people there were tzaddikim. Obviously not the Avu B'noi Shabar Naira Ma'irasa, and not this guy who tried to frame his wife. But other than that, we're saying the people, by and large, there were tzaddikim. Well, Omalei Abaya L'Rav Yosef, so Abaya now asks Rav Yosef, Oma'acha D'Havu Tzaddikim Kolahai, well, given that the people of Parsechania were such tzaddikim, my time at Yanush. So why were they punished? Why was the city eventually destroyed and then the people were killed or taken into gulfs? Omalei, so Rav Yosef tells him, Mishum D'lo Yi'abu Al Yerushalayim, because in Parsechania, they did not mourn for the destruction of Yerushalayim. Dichtiv, as you find a pasuk, Simcha as Yerushalayim v'gilabah kol ayaveha, be happy with Yerushalayim and be glad with it, all of those who love it. Sisu ita moses kol misablam aleha, rejoice and be joyful with it, all those who mourn for it. So we learn, in other words, in that as we say, that kol misablam Yerushalayim zoicha v'roya b'simcha, so that anybody who mourns for the destruction of Yerushalayim will end up having the schus to see the nechama of it. And here, where they weren't mourning from Yerushalayim, then we're saying that therefore they didn't have schus to protect them. Marsha actually points out that Bava ben Buta lived in the time of Hurdus, which implies that at least one of these stories took place while the second Beis Mikdash was still standing. But the point is, in other words, we're saying that if at the time they were tzaddikim, we can assume at the time of the Churban, or whenever exactly Kfar Schania was destroyed, that also they were still tzaddikim, but the problem is they didn't mourn for Yerushalayim. Now, Marsha actually brings from Medrash Rabbah that it wasn't just why did they not mourn for Yerushalayim? He brings from Eicha Rabbah, there it mentions that the people of Yerushalayim used to take advantage in terrible ways of the people who came on Aliyah L'Regel. They would cheat them and they would do all kinds of things. So to the point where the Medrash says that there were people not just who didn't mourn, there were actually Jews who were happy when Yerushalayim was destroyed because they said these people got what they deserved. Nevertheless, though, they still shouldn't have talked that way, and they still should have at least been mourning the fact that the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed. And for the fact that they didn't is why they didn't have schus for Hashem to save them later on when the Romans came to attack them. Next, the third one, we said before, the third example where they didn't consider the consequences of their actions. Ashoka derispa chorib beter. Beter was destroyed because of the side of a carriage that women ride in. And Beta was a very big city. It had hundreds of thousands of Jews in it. Later on, Bar Kochbo, who more generally calls Ben Kuziva, used it as his headquarters. It seems by putting together the histories of the time that Bar Kochba actually at one point fighting against the Romans actually managed to reconquer Yerushalayim, but then the Romans were able to push him out of him and his forces out of there. So instead they went to Beta, which was a strong fortified city not far from Yerushalayim, and they were eventually the Goyim caught up with them and were able to conquer the city and kill all the Jews over there. So
Rabbi, I'm just confused. But he was saying miles of this place, and now we're saying the Chassidus that they weren't mourning about against of Yerushalayim, the Korban Yerushalayim.
Right.
The same place, the same tzaddikim.
Same place, the same Kfar Sechania. We're asking, given that they were tzaddikim, as we see from the three previous stories, why did Hashem cause them to be destroyed? And the reason is because they didn't mourn for Yerushalayim yet.
Wow. Okay.
So the Gemara continues, Ashoka de Rispa Chorav Beitar. Beitar was destroyed. The trigger for it was the side of a carriage. What happened was the people in Beitar had the minhag, ki havam sialab yunuka, when a boy was born, shasli arza, they would plant a cedar tree, yunukta, and when a girl was born, shasli tunisa, they would plant a tunisa, which is a related kind of tree. It actually translates it with a French word that means a fir tree. Anyway, the point is, so they planted these trees in honor of the children. When the children would grow up and get married, they would chop down the respective trees, and they would use the wood from the trees to make their chuppas. I've sometimes said nowadays, when you consider how much paperwork there is when a baby is born, or almost anything, they should also plant a tree every time a baby is born to eventually harvest it for the paper that they use. But anyway, here they used it to make the chuppah for the chasim kala. One day the emperor's daughter was passing by over there in her carriage. It bar shoka de rispak, the side of the carriage broke. Kotsu hours of Ailova, so they chopped down one of the cedar trees and put it and used it and were using it to fix the side of the wagon. Also, Nofalalai Mukhunu, the Jews came and attacked them and hit them and beat them. Again, like we said before, the idea is they figure it's more than just the one tree. It shows that the Goyim want to interfere with our Pruvu. So in other words, like with the story with the rooster and the hen, they're figuring this is like the first stage of the Romans are going to be like the Mitzrim, Hoven Ischak Malay, and we're going to try to prevent Jewish births. And therefore they took it, and then therefore they overreacted like that. Nevertheless, we're saying it was careless of them to do it because they should have considered the consequences. Also, Omer the case of Modubach Yudai, they came and went to the soldiers went and told the emperor the Jews have rebelled against you. Also, Alayosay came to fight against them. Now, he was a posuk from Eicha that's relevant to this, so that we daushin about what happened next. The posuk says, it's actually the next posuk we quoted before the posuk, Bila Hashem Balei Chomal. This is the next posuk after that. The posuk says, Goda Bochari Af Peo Keren Yisrael. Hashem chopped down in his fury all the Keren of the Jewish people. Now, the simple meaning, now Keren means a horn, and often in Tanakh, it means the power. So in the simple meaning, it means Hashem chopped down the power and of the Jewish people. But here the Gemara is also going to understand the word keren in the sense of a horn, like that you blow during a war. So Omer Rabba Bohu, Omer Rabbi Yechanan, Elu Shmoinim Elef Kaunim Ochama, this refers to 80,000 war trumpets. So in other words, you're talking about just the trumpeters of the Roman army alone, numbered 80,000. The army, of course, is a lot bigger. Shenichnasu L'krach Beitar B'shal V'shal Chadura, that they entered the city of this fortified city of Beitar when they conquered it. V'hogaban Noshim V'noshim Bataf, and they killed men, women, and children over there. In fact, the Rambam says, you know, one of the five things that we commemorate on Tisha B'Av is V'nechrava Beitar. And the Rambam explains that because Beitar was such a large and populous Jewish city, the destruction of it was almost on a par with the Churban, Beis HaMikdash. And that's why among the things that we mention on Tisha B'Av is that as well. So they killed so many people. The Gemara says, Ad Shaholach Domen V'nofel L'Yama Gadol, until the blood flowed into the Yama Gadol, into the Mediterranean. Now you're going to argue, okay, so Beitar happens to be close. It's by the seacoast, so it's not that far. So therefore, so naturally the blood would flow there. Note, Rechoika Hoysa Mil, it was a mil away from the sea. So it means there was an enormous amount of blood to be able to flow that far. Now, an interesting point is that the city of Beitar, nowadays there's a modern city of that name in Eretz Yisrael, and it seems to be relatively close to, it's maybe not the exact place, but it's pretty close to the one that we're talking about over here in the Gemara, and it's a lot further than a mil from the Mediterranean. So there are in fact people that argue that maybe the Yama Gadol over here does not mean the actual Mediterranean. Maybe it means like some lake, some large lake that was nearby that all the blood spilled into. Anyway, but the point is, it was a mile away, and yet it flowed that far, showing how many people had been killed. Tanya, Rabbi Eliezer HaGadol, Rabbi Eliezer HaGadol says, Shnei Necholim Yesh B'Vikas Yadayim, in a valley called Bikas Yadayim, literally means the valley of hands, there are two streams over there. Echad Moshech Eilech Ve'echad Moshech Eilech. One flows in one direction and one the other direction. When the people of Beta were killed and so much blood was flowing, Shiru Chachamim, Shnei Chalokim Mayim Ve'echad Dam, the Chachamim estimated that the content of what was in those valleys, in those rivers at that point, was two parts water and one part blood, because so much blood had been spilled. The Masnisatana and a Braisa we learn Sheva Shonim Botsu Ovid Chavim as Karmen, Midaman Shah Yisrael, Bloy Zevel. For 7 years, the Goyim in that area were able to fertilize their vineyards with the blood of the Jews who had been killed without needing any other fertilizer. This is, by the way, when we talk about we have the Brocha Atoiv Va'Metiv in benching, and we say Atoiv Shaloi Hisrichu Va'Metiv Shinitna Lekvura, that the Chachamim established it when the dead of Beta were eventually able to be buried, when the Romans finally gave permission to bury them, and they made the Brocha Atoiv Va'Metiv, that Atoiv that they had, that the bodies hadn't decayed all those years, and Ametiv that eventually they were able to be buried, the Chachamim set that Brocha up as part of benching. And one point is, that has to do with the fact over here, we're making the connection between them and wine, and therefore benching, which is supposed to be done a la kois, then therefore specifically there they added a bracha to thank Hashem for that, but also to commemorate for all time what happened over here. In fact, Rabbi Shamshon Afal Hirsch mentions in his commentary on the Siddur, he says that one reason the Chachamim set that up in benching is to be a lesson for the Jewish people for all time. Don't ever try to rebel against the Goyim that you live under their power again. You see what happened to them. So even though on the one level we're thanking Hashem that they were finally able to be buried, on another level though we're also saying that we should keep in mind for ourselves what brought that about, and realize to never do that again. There's actually a Medrash or Yerushalmi, I think, that says that from then the dignity of the Jewish people was destroyed, and it will never come back fully until Moshiach comes. So like it was the ultimate last stand in a certain sense. I mean, we Jewish people are still here, but and the Romans are long gone, but nevertheless the honor and the glory of the Jewish people was gone with the destruction of Beta. So now the Gemara is going to talk about, since we talked about how many people were killed in Beta, now the Gemara is going to give us another example going back to the Churban Bayis Rishon of how many Jews were killed at that. A certain old man from the people of Yerushalayim told me as follows. The Bikazu in this valley near Yerushalayim, Horag Nebuzaradan, Rav Tabochim, Mosayim Ba'achas Esri Ribay. Nebuzaradan, the chief executioner of Nebuchadnezzar at the time of the first Beis Hamikdash, killed 211 times 10,000 Jews, which means 2,110,000. Over Yerushalayim, Horag Tishim Ba'aber Riboy, and in Yerushalayim, he killed 94 times 10,000, meaning 940,000 al Evan Achas, on one stone, all in one place. Ad Shaholach Domin V'Noga B'Domin Shal Zechariah, until the blood of all the people he had killed went and pulled up and touched the blood of Zechariah, who Zechariah Ben Yehoyada, who had been killed in the Azara 200 odd years earlier, L'Kayim Mashanema, and thus it fulfills what it says in the Pasuk, B'Domin Nago'u, blood has touched blood. In context, the Navi is talking about how Jews are doing so much killing that the blood of one victim touches another. But here we understand that it means, here the Gemara's understanding, that it means when the punishment came through Nebuzaradan, then also the blood of Jews who were killed by Nebuzaradan ended up touching the blood of Zechariah, whom the Jews themselves had killed 200 odd years earlier. Why these numbers dapper 211 and 94? So Ben Yehoyada explains, he brings a gematria for each one of them. 211 is the gematria of Ma'alalei Kael, the deeds of Hashem, and 94 is the gematria of Domim from the pasuk we just mentioned. So therefore, representing, in other words, that it was all orchestrated by Hashem because of the killing of Zechariah. So what happened with Zechariah? Ashkechev l'domi de Zechariah. What happened was, that Nebuzaradan found Zechariah's blood. It was bubbling and going upward. Like it wasn't just lying there still. It was bubbling and then trying to jump off the ground. Omer my house, and it was Rav Nass, what's going on? What's this blood? Omer le dam zvachim de ishtapoch. So they said it's blood of korbanos that was spilled, and therefore, like so to speak, like it wanted to go on the mizbeach, and it can't, and therefore it's boiling and bubbling. I see dummy v'le idmu. So he brought blood of various kinds of animals that can be brought as korbanos, and none of them exactly resembled it. Yeah, by the way, by Yosef, when they dipped his coat in the blood of Seir Izim, and Rashi explains over there, because the blood of a goat resembles human blood, Maram Shif talks about that over here. He says, okay, there's a certain resemblance, but when you have one next to the other, as here you would, then you could tell the difference. Anyway, Omalahu, so he says to the Jews, Iam Ritoli Mutav, if you tell me what's really going on over here, then good. The Ilav, and if not, Masrik Nulab Saraicha, but Masriki the Parazola, I'll comb off your flesh with iron combs. Amulei, so the Jews say to Nebuzaradan in my name, Allah. So what can we tell you? We've got to tell you the truth. Neviya have a bon. There was a Novi among us to have a kamuchachlon memili d'shmaya. He was giving us Musar on matters of Hashem. In other words, he was telling us, do tshuva or else there are going to be consequences. We stood up against him and killed him. And now it's many years. It's already well over 200 years. And the blood has not calmed down yet. There is, by the way, a famous story that's brought. The Rebbe alluded to it once in a sicha about Miriam Bas Bilga, that there was a certain limud schus about the Jews who did it at the time, because Zechariah was going to say in Nevuah that the Beis Hamikdash was going to be destroyed, and they figured that if they prevent him from saying the Nevuah, it won't happen, and Zechariah himself maybe should have held back the Nevuah. Whatever the case, though, the fact is they killed him, and for that there had to be consequences generations later. So Nevuzaradan, the cool Nevuzaradan, says, I'll calm him down. I see Sanhedrin Dola, Sanhedrin Tana, caught the little vase, took the Sanhedrin Dola and Sanhedrin Tana and killed them near there, Voloinoch, and the blood didn't calm down. Bachurim of Sulis, caught the little vase, young men and women, Voloinoch. I see Tnokas, Shabbos Rabban, children who learn in Cheder and killed them, caught the little vase, Voloinoch, and it still didn't calm down. And as we said before, he killed millions of people. Omalei finally says, Zechariah, Tovim Shabahemi Badim, I've destroyed the best among the Jewish people. Nicholach Dabdinu Lakulu, do you want me to destroy all of them? Kido Omalei Hochi Noch, when he said that, then the blood calmed down. Bahi Shaita Hira Tshuva Badaite, at that moment, Nebuzaradan started thinking Tshuva in his mind. Omer, he thinks to himself, if the Jewish people were punished so severely for killing one person, for killing Zechariah, Ahu Gavra, that person, meaning I, Dekoto, Kolhani Nishmasu, who killed all these souls, Alachas Kamakama, how much more so that I'm in trouble. Orak also, so he ran away and left. Shodder Shtar Partosa Bevese, he sent a will to his house, the Igayer, and he became a Ger. It may actually be that it didn't actually become a ger right then and there. It may mean the Gemara may just be sort of telescoping the story. We do find the Wazaradan leading an exile of Jews from Mitzrayim a few years later. Jews who had escaped to Mitzrayim after the Churban and after the killing of Gedaliah ben Achikam. The Pasuk mentions that Nebuzaradan exiled there from there to Bava when Nebuchadnezzar conquered Yerushalayim. So the Gemara might mean that eventually, years later, Nebuzaradan had this thought and became a ger. So the Gemara says in this connection, Tana, we learn in a Braisa, Naaman Ger Toshav Hava, Hoya, Naaman, the famous general from Elisha's times who had Saras, and Elisha cured him of his Saras, he became a Ger Toshav, he gave up of a Zorah, as you find in the Psukim over there. Nebuzaradan, Ger Tzedekoya, on the other hand, Nebuzaradan, as we're saying, became an actual Ger Tzedek and accepted on himself all the mitzvahs. Other examples where we find that a Rasha, an enemy of the Jewish people, that great things came from him. Amibnei Bonav Shal Haman, Limdu Torah B'Bnei Brak, descendants of Haman taught Torah in B'Nei Brak. There is, by the way, an enormous amount of discussion about whether you're even able to accept Gerim from Amalek. I mean, so how could descendants of Haman become Gerim? There's a lot of different answers among them that maybe they were descended from him only on the mother's side, or maybe they weren't even known to be descendants of Amalek until later on, and then they discovered it, and there's a lot of different, and b'chlal, la halacha, it seems the mechilta says you can't accept them as Gerim, but that mechilta may not be accepted as halacha. Anyway, Mibnei Bonav Shal Sisra Limdu Tanekas Birshalayim, descendants of Sisra taught children in Yerushalayim. There are different Girsois over here, and there is something that Reb Nissim Goin brings that particularly the descendants of Sisra referred to over here means Reb Akiva, that he was descended from Sisra. On the other hand, Maharam Shif says over here, maybe not. You're just saying they taught Torah in Yerushalayim, meaning, in other words, they can't have been very important. Anyway, b'nei banav shal Sancheiriv, lindu Torah banabim, descendants of Sancheiriv, taught Torah in public, man inun shmayev avtalyim. And who are those descendants of Sancheiriv? Shmayev avtalyim. Some say they themselves were Gerim, some say they were descendants of Gerim, whatever. Here we have all examples of great, famous, of infamous Rishoyim, where great things came from. By the way, why don't we mention Niran Kesar in this connection? Is because we said Rav Meir came from him, because Niran himself became a Ger. So therefore, we don't hear the point is, the Gemara is saying that even though the ancestors remained Tmeim, Haman and Sisra and so forth, and Sancheiriv all died as Rishoyim, nevertheless, they still had great Jews as their descendants. But anyway, Hainu Dichtiv, this that we're saying that so many Jews were killed as a result of the blood of Zechariah, the Pasuk says, Nasatias Domal Tzchiach Sela Lebilti Kosis. Hashem says, I've placed the blood that was spilled on a bare rock, that it can't be covered. So in other words, the same way over here with Zechariah, Hashem caused that the blood is still out there in the open. They couldn't cover it, and therefore that's how Nebuzaradan found it a couple hundred years later. Continuing on this topic of Goyim massacring large numbers of Jews, the Gemara says, "Hakol kol Yaakov ayadayim yidei Esav." The voice is the voice of Yaakov. The hands are the hands of Esav. Hakol, when it says the voice, means in other words a voice of crying out. Ze Adrianus Kesar. This refers to when Adrianus Kesar, Hadrian, he's called in English, when he and his army came and attacked Shaharag Balsandria on the side over here. It brings a different girsa, Tarhinus. Which is Trajan, which is the previous Roman emperor. Anyway, Shaharag Alexandria Shamitzrayim, Shishim Riboy, Al Shishim Ribi Kiflayim Kiyotz Mitzrayim. He killed in Alexandria in Egypt 1,200,000 Jews, which is twice as many as had left Mitzrayim. Tosfos brings from a different Gemara that Alexandros Mokdon killed them, but apparently Tosfos says the place was resettled afterwards, and now Adrianus or Tarchinus killed them. So that's the Hakol. There was a voice of crying out at the time. When it continues, Kol Yaakov, the voice of Yaakov, Ze Aspasyonus Kesar, that refers to Aspasyonus, or on the side it says it should be Adrianus Kesar. Shahorak B'krach Beter Arameis Riba, he killed in the city of Beter 400 times 10,000, which would be 4 million. Va'amila bas alofim riboy, or some say, abas alofim riboy, some say 4,000 times 10,000, which then would be 40 million. So huge numbers of Jews were killed in those places. Sometimes with some of these kinds of things, some of Foshim talk about, maybe it doesn't mean literally that there were that many Jews there, but it means had they not been killed, then their descendants would still be among us now, and altogether they would number over the generations that many. Anyway, the point is, so that's the Hakol Yaakov. That's the Kol Yaakov. Vayadayim midei Esav, and when it continues, Hayadayim midei Esav, Zu Malchus Rishah. This refers to the wicked kingdom of the Romans, Shech Rivas Batenu Vesofa Sechalenu Vehiglisanu Meratzenu, which destroyed our house and burnt our Hechel and took us into Golus from our land. So that's that Yitzchak is saying in advance by Kol Yaakov, Vayadayim midei Esav, foretelling all of that. A Dover Acher, another explanation, HaKol Kol Yaakov means Ein Lecha Tefila Shema Elas She'en Mo Mizara SheYaakov. You never find a Tefila that's effective that doesn't have something of Yaakov in it. There always has to be Yaakov, has to somebody somehow be involved in saying to the Tefila. Maram Shif says, what about, we said before, the Kesar on Amud Aleph, that Davin, that he should be saved from Bar Doraima, and Hashem listened to him. There Yaakov was involved as well, in the sense that Bar Doraima said the wrong thing, and therefore Hashem punished him. So there always has to be Kol Yaakov. You never find a winning battle where Esav descendants are not somehow involved. So that's another meaning of Akur Kol Yaakov, Vayadayim Midei Esav. So Vahainu Dichtiv, Vahainu de Omer Rabbi Lazar. Now this bears out what Rabbi Lazar says. B'shoit loshen techave. The pasuk says at the shoit, which literally a shoit means a whip. At the whip of the tongue, you should hide. That means b'chure loshen techave. When the tongue is causing fights, then you should hide. Rashi explains this goes all the way back now to the story of Kamsa Bar Kamsa, that as a result of Lashon Hara, the Bis Mikdash was destroyed, and all these things happen after that. So now the Gemara is getting back to that. Moshe says this is a long time later. The Gemara should have brought this earlier. So he says it means in general, What we mean is that in general, any time that Bnei Yaakov are using their tongues in the wrong way for Lashon Hara, when they're using it in the right way for Tefillah, then good. When they're using it in the wrong way, then you wind up that they have to end up hiding out from the hands of Esau. And the Gemara continues, Amar of Yehuda Amar Rab, Mai Dichtiv Al Naris Bavel Shom Yashavnu Gam Bachinu Mizachrenu Asiyon. The Pasuk says, by the rivers of Bavel, there we sat and we cried when we remembered Zion. Now, David HaMelech wrote this capital, and he was long before the Churban. Melamed Sheher Oa, Kodesh Baruch Hu LeDavid, Churban Bayis Rishon, V'Churban Bayis Sheni. So we see that Hashem showed at David in advance the destruction of the first and second Batei Mikdash. Churban Bayis Rishon, Shenem Al Naris Bavel Shom Yashavnu Gam Bachinu. Bayis Sheni, Dichtiv Zechur Hashem Livnei Edom, Asiyom Yerushalayim. Remember Hashem against the people of Edom, which is the Romans, the day of the destruction of Yerushalayim, Ha'omrim, where they said, Oru, Oru, Adei Yisayid Bad, destroy it, destroy it down to the foundation. That refers particularly to the Churban Bayis Sheni. There was actually places where it talks about in the Yerushalmi, I think, that the first Beis Hamikdash, the Babylonians burnt it, but most of the walls and the foundations were still there and still visible, as opposed to the Romans completely destroyed the Beis Hamikdash down to the foundations. So therefore, when we're saying Oru Arais Adi Yisayid Ba, then we're talking about the Churban Bayis Sheni. Okay, well, we'll stop here and we'll continue tomorrow, Beis Hashem.